Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, the voice of reverse mortgages and seniors, hosted by Dirk Gray. My NMLS number is 222-785, and New Mexico Reverse Mortgages NMLS number is 1102-656. This information is not from HUD or FHA, and was not approved by HUD or a government agency. If the borrower does not meet loan obligations, such as taxes and insurance, then the loan will need to be repaid. The information given during the show is not meant to be all-inclusive. Any guests on the show are not endorsed by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage. This show is brought to you by our producer, New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, helping you move forward in reverse. Our website is www.reversenm.com. And our office phone number is 505-897-4900. Today on the show, my guest is Guy Tan from the Buttiger Law Firm. And I had Guy on a previous show, thoroughly enjoyed him, and you guys are going to enjoy him too. Welcome to the show, Guy.
Thank you, Dirk.
Great to have you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, I know you do a number of different things for your law firm. So why don't we begin with real estate law?
Okay.
Go ahead and just talk about what you want to talk about in regard to real estate law and maybe kind of some of the things you cover.
Okay. Well, you know, our firm and myself in particular, we cover pretty much all things real estate, from transaction work, buying, selling, assisting in that process, title issues, preparing deeds, you know, a lot of the basics, but we also have been involved with development and subdivisions, disputes, of course, you know, like to avoid those, but sometimes they can't. So we've been involved in litigation of real estate disputes, whether boundaries or easement issues. So pretty all-encompassing. Real estate's been a part of my practice now for going on probably about 17 years.
Is the buying and selling guy... in terms of, do you do closing work or do you help them structure the transactions?
Well, it depends, and a big distinction would be commercial and residential. So most residential transactions here in New Mexico are handled by a title company, and so really the attorney's role is fairly limited. We are reviewing usually the contracts that the realtors have already put together, making sure that they're going to work, particularly deadlines and things like that in a contract. So we review that paperwork. We also often will look at the title binder or the title report, the commitment to issue title insurance, and see if there's anything in that report that raises any concerns about the title to the property. So residential stuff's pretty straightforward. And to answer one of your questions is no, we do not do the closing for the real estate. New Mexico really is almost exclusively title companies that handle that. Now, commercial is a little different. You know, you don't kind of have the same realtors and the same forms. There are forms out there, but a lot of times commercial deals are a little more tailored to that specific transaction. So we are a lot more involved in negotiating the terms of the contract. It's not really a case of the contract being brought to me to review. We're more involved in the process of putting the contract together. But we still are not the closers on that. We still are going to have a title company involved, because anyone dealing in real estate, you always, you know, as a buyer, you always need to get title insurance. And that's one thing, unfortunately, I see sometimes some deals where that's not the case, and that can, you know, can really go wrong for a purchaser.
So you're suggesting that it's a good idea to get title insurance?
Absolutely. In fact, I don't know that I would represent a buyer in a transaction if they were not going to purchase title insurance or have it provided. Usually a seller provides the title insurance in a, you know, certainly in a residential transaction, so it's usually not much of an issue.
Is the, you know, I know that, or I think I know, that title insurance is regulated by the, not the Real Estate Commission, the Insurance Commission.
Yes.
And so are they standard costs throughout, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I guess they generate the costs, or they create what the costs are. They're the same costs for you as they are for me.
Yes. The state dictates what title insurance is going to cost. So a lot of, so primarily, you know, the cost of your title insurance, no matter what title company you use, is going to be the same. Mm-hmm. So it's the, you know, companies that do a good job, that have good people there, and the closings go really smoothly. You know, you build relationships with the title closers. And so I usually like to work with the same people over and over, but, the price is going to be the same, should be. And it's based on the sale price of the property.
And Guy, do you, when you like represent somebody that's involved in a commercial transaction, do you charge a fee or do you charge hourly? How do you handle that as a customer?
For most real estate transactions, we do charge hourly, or we charge our hourly rate, but we don't obviously, you know, if I spend 15 minutes, you only are billed for 15 minutes, but it is an hourly rate. Yeah, we don't usually do a flat fee. There's just usually there's too many unknowns. And it works out often to the good for the client because reviewing, you know, in a residential transaction, if we're using a standard form, it's something that we've seen many, many times. We can review it very efficiently and quickly. Don't need to spend a lot of time. And so it comes in at a not too much cost for the client.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's back up a little bit and talk about your background. And how you ended up, what brought you into law, and where did you go to school, and that kind of thing.
All right. Well, I'm not too interesting, but I graduated from the University of New Mexico here in Albuquerque with a degree in history. And so if you don't want to be a teacher, you know, you probably need more education. And I was accepted and went to the University of New Mexico Law School, really enjoyed it. It had not been, you know, a goal of mine all my life to go to law school, but I enjoyed it. I thought it would be a really good education, even if I didn't practice law. Both my father and my grandfather made their living as a CPA, but they were both members of the bar, just never practiced law. So, you know, there's a little bit of family history there. And then I, you know, got to law school, really enjoyed it. Of course, had student loans. So when I got out, needed a job, started practicing, and just, you know, I've never looked back.
Did you start with Buttiger?
No. I actually started working with a firm in Rio Rancho while I was still in law school. So that was a great way, you know, to get your foot in the door to have a job when you got out of school. And it was a firm, really great people. I really enjoyed it. And I was there for probably 7 or 8 years. And just, you know, just moved on just because I needed a change. Mm-hmm. And then I was at another firm with a partner, who has since retired. And so now, I'm here with, Buttiger. John Buttiger and I are partners here at the Buttiger and Associates.
Good for you. That's great. That's a good story. And I noticed on the back of your card that you do work in a number of different areas, the real estate law that we're talking about. I know you do estate planning and some elder issues, and I know you work in guardianship and maybe conservatorship and a number of other things. Let's stick to the real estate law a little bit more.
Okay.
Is the real estate getting more complicated and the process involved as time moves forward in terms of the transactions?
Not that I have really noticed, but maybe just because I've gotten better at it over time. And so, I don't notice those changes perhaps, but it doesn't seem like that's the case.
I remember when I got out of school, I went to work for the Vaughn Company. And I was there from 83 till I think 88 or so. And I remember the purchase agreements were like 4 pages long. And now they're like books,
right?
You know, for residential properties. And is it the same way with commercial?
It is. And you know what happened over that course of time from when you started out to now is, you know, you have a contract. And if something goes wrong, then the contract doesn't address it. You add something into your contract to address whatever that problem was. Uh-huh. And over time, you keep adding these things to address these problems. So the contract does grow, and they're pretty long. But, you know, here when you're using a standard form, the form's meant to address every issue, mm-hmm. whether it applies to your transaction or not. So they don't really need to be that long necessarily. I mean, if I personally write a purchase agreement for a real estate transaction, you know, it could be 4 or 5 pages instead of 10 pages. You know,
if you just address the issues you need to address.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if I'm representing a seller, we're selling as is with no, you know, warranties or something if we can get away with it. So keep it simple.
Yeah. Well, you know, you know, I'm with New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, and we also do the reverse for purchases, not just the reverse refis.
Okay.
And there, it's an interesting product with a lot of cool pieces to it. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. Which part of the law that you practice is your favorite, or do you have a favorite?
I don't know that I have a favorite area of the law, but I mean, I enjoy real estate, and I enjoy real estate transactions, and I enjoy the estate planning because in a lot of those cases that I work on, they're not necessarily so adversarial like a lot of legal work. And, you know, when you can work on a case and everybody's happy, that's sometimes rare in my profession, and I really enjoy it. Real estate work. I mean, I love it. My family, aside from having lawyers, also has a lot of realtors, in the family. So I've grown up with real estate.
All right. Well, you know, we need to take a break. But it's great talking to Guy about his law career. It's time for a break. You're listening to Gray Matters discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage here on 1600 AM and 93.7 FM News Radio, KIVA. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Gray Matters discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage with your host, Dirk Gray. Gray Matters discussing all things senior is heard weekly on Saturdays, beginning at 10 a.m. Mountain Time, and streams to a global audience. Before I continue my conversation with Guy, in our segment called Because You're a Senior, These Are Available to You, last week we discussed Ace Hardware's offering 10% off for those 60-plus, and Albertsons is offering 10% off on the first Wednesday of the month. This week, I want to tell you about a couple of restaurants. Fuddruckers is offering 10% off on senior platters for those 55 plus. And IHOP, which is International House of Pancakes, is also offering 10% off on senior meals for those 65 plus. So every week, listen for Because You're a Senior, These Are Available to You. All right, I'm continuing my conversation with Guy Tan from the Butterger Law Firm. Guy is one of the two partners here. And in the first segment, we talked about real estate law, and now we're going to move into estate planning, which is, you know, I'm approaching 62 years old in January, so more and more I'm beginning to think about these things. And it's funny how you really don't think about it much earlier in life, but as you get older, you do. So this is going to be an interesting segment for me. Actually, all of them are, but this specifically is going to be a great topic. Okay, so let's assume, Guy, that I come to your office and I don't know anything about estate planning. Where do we start? How does that conversation sound?
Well, the first thing is just to come in, sit down, and get to know each other. I like to, you know, talk to the clients, get to know a little bit about who they are, where they are in life, who their family is. And you mentioned something kind of in the intro there. And, you know, it's never too early to do estate planning. Everybody puts it off. Not everybody, but a lot of people. It's not a fun, sexy topic, you know, to think about dying. But everyone really should do it, particularly young parents. Because once you have minor children, it's really, really important to get your estate planning. Because if something were to happen to you and your spouse, you know, those children need to be protected and taken care of. So it's never too early. But once I can get you into my office and sit down, you know, learn who you are, what your interests are. At some point, we do have to get into what your assets are, your estate, you know, what you own, liabilities, and come up with a plan, an estate plan, of course. But I like to educate the people, let them know what the process is like if you have a will, if you have a trust, what probate is. Most people have a lot of misconceptions of a lot of these things, powers of attorney. You know, they've planned their estate and put their kids on their bank accounts, things like that. And we, you know, I try to find out if those sort of things have happened. Ask people about beneficiary designations on retirement accounts, on insurance. A lot of times people have forgotten what those are, particularly if they've been employed by the same, you know, outfit for a long time. Life changes a lot over the years. You know, maybe you were hired before you were married. You know, your spouse doesn't want to find out that they're not the named beneficiary, you know. So we always like to relive those things. But usually a first meeting is just getting to know each other and giving them some information and saying, you know, think about what we talked about and, you know, get back to me if you'd like to go forward and do some planning.
Well, you know something, because of what I do, you know, my clients are seniors. And they range in age from around 62, because that's the age that the youngest age you can be to do a reverse mortgage. But we'll get up occasionally into the 90s. And what you talked about is exactly what happens with some of these people. And I know what happens with people that are younger too. But they, life happens to them, and all of a sudden they're asking questions about, well, you know, I used to be married. And now I married somebody new, and she wants to be on the reverse mortgage, but she's only 60. And how can I accomplish that? And so we've got to go, you know, you go through all those scenarios, and that's what you do. You find out the details of somebody's life and then start planning for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of clients don't know what to tell you. So one thing is, having done this a long time, you know, estate planning, you learn the questions to ask, you know, things that, that people have forgotten. You know, an older couple come in with, you know, several grown-up children. We're planning the estate. One thing that comes up quite a bit is I ask them, have you given one of your children something significant that the others haven't received? A down payment to buy a house? You bought them a car when they got their job? You know, these are the things parents do because they love their kids. They forget about it. They're not worried about being paid back. But you know what? All the other kids know who got what, and they remember. And that's a big issue. And so, you know, if, say, a couple had given one child a down payment on the house, that's fine. But a lot of times we want to address that in the estate planning. So the other kids know, yes, mom and dad remember this. They're taking this into account in whatever the estate plan says. So, things like that we can get out of clients at meetings, you know, and ask the right questions and come up with a plan that's really going to work for them.
Guy, you know, you brought up earlier in kind of the general list of things, a power of attorney. Talk about, you know, when they should get it initially, and why they would get one.
Well, a power of attorney, you know, for people who are not, you know, familiar with these, a power of attorney is an agency arrangement. You have the principal, the person giving the power of attorney to their agent. And usually we're dealing with one of two kinds, a financial power of attorney or a healthcare power of attorney. And I'm going to start with the healthcare power of attorney, because this brings up kind of a subject that I've had to deal with that really falls through the cracks a lot, I think. And that is powers of attorney from children. When your children turn 18, they're an adult, and you no longer have a right to any of their medical information, you know, healthcare providers. HIPAA laws shield our medical information. And so, you know, I try to talk to all my clients who have kids, you know, getting to college age and going away to college. And so we want to get the healthcare power of attorney from that child back to the parents. So if something happens while they're away at school, the hospital, whoever, will talk to the parents, give them information. I've had cases where that's not the case. You know, the child is 20 years old, something has happened, and no one will speak to the parents about what has happened. And it's, you know, any parent would know that's very distressing. So so it's really, you know, it's almost never too soon to have your powers of attorney, even with financial, because you could, you know, become incapacitated from an accident, from who knows what. It's not just being old and infirm that you need someone to help you necessarily. And a power of attorneys are kind of the first way that you can avoid getting into that guardian and conservator, because you've named someone that you know and trust who can act in your place for either your financial or your health care needs. And, you know, they don't necessarily get used a lot, but it's good to have in place. I mean, I have mine now. My wife is my power of attorney. I'm not sure she knows it, but if something happened to me or I was unavailable, you know, she's got the legal ability to sign documents for me, financial documents, healthcare documents. And so it's a really good thing to have in place, really, for everyone.
Does sometimes are different people chosen for the health versus the financial just because of their strengths?
Absolutely. Quite often, I will have plenty of clients. They'll say, "Well, this person is really financially savvy. It's a friend of mine who's a financial planner, a CPA, or a family member, and that's who I want to be my financial power of attorney. But, you know, my sister or someone is a nurse. I would rather them be my healthcare power of attorney." So it's certainly two different, you know, kind of skill sets in someone you're looking for in those arrangements. And one thing about powers of attorney is we usually want a backup. You know, I name Bob or someone is my power of attorney, but if Bob is unable or unwilling, then I want a backup or another backup. And that way, you know, if something were to happen, because anything can happen to me, anything can happen to Bob. And so instead of having to go back and get a new power of attorney all the time, you've got these built-in successors to the appointment.
Well, you know something, the scenario that you brought up where something happens to a child,
mm-hmm,
and the parents don't have access to the medical team or however you'd explain that happened to my family.
Oh, goodness.
My brother was hurt, and fortunately my dad was a physician, so he was able to talk to them and they were willing to talk to him. But I would assume that they didn't have a power of attorney in that case, because he was 19. You mentioned 20. He was 19 when it happened, and it was serious. And so, you know, how many people, you know, 1 out of 100 have these kinds of things at a fairly early age?
You're asking me how many people out of 100?
Yeah.
Well,
how many are good planners? I guess that's what I'm asking.
Not many. Certainly the minority. Mm-hmm. The minority. I mean, I try to press upon people I know that when you have some sort of a life change, marriage, divorce, a child being born, that's, if you haven't already done it, those should be great prompts to get someone to think about their estate planning, powers of attorney, things like that. So, but again, you know, it's not a fun topic to think about. It's, you know, it's not like buying, you know, it's not like food or shelter. It's an expense that, you know, there is an expense. Obviously, attorneys are not, you know, cheap to put this stuff together. And so that stop some people from doing it. But, you know, myself included, we all think, especially when we're young, we're invincible, we're going to live forever. It happens to the other guy, it doesn't happen to me. So, you know, typical clients are certainly, you know, 50s, 60s, or older for estate planning.
Well, you know, this to me, it's fascinating stuff. And Lois and I did some planning earlier in our life, but it's probably something we need to do some more of, because things need to be updated. So, all right, it's time for another break. You're listening to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage with your host, Dirk Gray. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage with your host, Dirk Gray. Gray Matters is heard weekly on Saturdays, beginning at 10 a.m. Mountain Time, and streams to a global audience. In this section of the show, before we get back to Guy, I usually do a Q&A question, and I actually got an email from Kara in Albuquerque, and she asked if on a HECM or a reverse for purchase, do you still not pay principal and interest? And or actually she said, do you pay principal and interest payments? And the answer to that would be no. You qualify for a percentage of equity in the home. That's applied to the sale price of the home, and then the borrower comes in with the balance plus closing costs, but no principal and interest payments are made. You still have to pay your property taxes, your homeowner's insurance, and the maintenance on the house. So hope that answers the question. If you have another question or you have a suggestion for a topic, please give me a call and or send me an email, and we'll get your question answered on air. All right, we're back with Guy Tan at the Buttiger Law Firm. Guy's here with he's one of the partners, one of two, And we're at this point, we talked about real estate law. We're in the process of talking about estate planning. And he kind of gave us an overview of what happens, you know, as a new customer comes in, what that looks like when somebody comes in, and kind of some of the steps that guy takes you through. So if it's something that you're looking at doing or thinking about doing, I think Guy would be a very good one to talk to, so give him a call and set up an appointment with him. Okay, Guy, let's talk about wills.
Okay.
That's one of those things we talked off air. I said I did some work earlier in life when we initially got married. I think we set up a trust. In fact, I know we set up a trust. But from that time until this, we haven't done any work, and I know there are things that need to be updated in the trust. So when should somebody get a will? Let's start with that.
Well, it's, you know, they should get a will as soon as they've, you know, are grown up. And I use that term loosely, I guess. You know, once you're an adult, really, it's a good idea to have a will, because even if you don't have a big estate, a will is great because it has your wishes. It has who's going to be in charge of your estate. The more decisions you can make in planning your estate, you know, should something happen to you, you've done that for the people that you've left behind. And, you know, losing anyone is a difficult time. And the more planning you've done to help your loved ones that you've left behind, the better. The more kind of decisions you've made, the fewer that they have to argue about. And so it's really never too soon to get that stuff done. Will, trust, you know, we can plan small estates, big estates. I mean, everyone needs their estate planning.
Okay, let's talk about the difference between a will and a trust.
Okay, and that's probably the most common question I get, because usually, you know, these days everybody can go online and kind of educate themselves. I'm sure I drive my doctor crazy, because if I go to the doctor, I've already looked up all my symptoms, you know, so I get the same thing. People come in and they've educated themselves a little bit usually, and that's the primary question that I get. Do I need a will? Do I need a trust? And, you know, it really depends on the circumstances. They both will pass on your estate, you know, name who you would like to be in charge of that process and pass on your estate. But there are some real significant differences. A will must always go to probate, and the probate is a legal process through the courts to appoint an executor and handle creditors and the distribution of an estate. And a lot of people either have been through the process or they've heard, you know, horror stories and are looking to avoid probate. Trust does not go to probate. So that is one thing that a lot of people like about a trust over a will. Not quite as common is people who are very private. You know, a will is submitted to the court for probate and becomes a public record. So anyone can go look up a will that's been probated and read the terms. And, you know, I would say unless you're a movie star or something, nobody's going to do that with your will, but it's out there. And a lot of people don't like that idea. And since a trust does not go through that process, it's a private document and it's never, you know, becomes a public document of any kind. Unless someone has an interest in the trust, they have no rights to see that trust document.
But in both cases, the wishes of whoever is getting the will or the trust, that information is spelled out in those documents.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the will or the trust will have kind of the dispositive provisions to say where your estate is going to go. Now, one thing that surprises a lot of people is if we plan an estate with a trust, we're still going to do a will. And that is because the trustee only controls the assets that we've funded and put into the trust. And you have clients that don't do a good job of getting their assets into the trust, or they acquire assets later after the trust was put together and they don't title them correctly. And so we always still have a will. We call it a pour over will, and it just makes sure that we get everything into the trust. So we have that. I think of it as a safety net for any kind of missing assets, lost assets. But we hope it doesn't ever come into play. You know, we do the trust to avoid the probate, avoid that cost. There is a cost, obviously, of probate, and we'd like to, you know, not have that when we do the trust.
Okay. You talk about if somebody dies without a will.
If you were to pass away with no estate planning of any kind, Well, then New Mexico has intestacy laws that will kick in. So we do have a probate code. So if you have no estate planning, our representatives up in Santa Fe have done your estate planning for you. And I don't know how comfortable everybody is with that, but we do have plenty of laws that would take care of that. And an estate usually will pass to the closest family, spouse and children. Now, being a community property state, you know, a decedent can have different kinds of property, separate property or community property, and they're treated differently. Most people aren't aware of that, and so that can cause some problems with an estate. But it works. I don't recommend, you know, using the intestacy laws to plan your estate. It'd be a much better idea to speak to an estate planner, even if it's just a very simple will. But your estate would be taken care of. But really where that bothers me more is the situation of incapacity, because if you've done no estate planning and you don't have a trust with a trustee or your powers of attorney in place and you become incapacitated, there's no one with the legal authority to assist you usually. And that's where guardian and conservatorships come in. And that's a process that we generally, you know, would want to avoid.
Okay, let's talk about those since you brought them up.
All right.
Okay, let's start with is it the guardianship?
It can be a guardianship, a conservatorship, both guardian and conservator. They're two different roles that the court can appoint someone to perform for the incapacitated person. And a conservator is appointed to take care of the financial affairs of the protected person. So they manage their funds, make sure bills are paid, that sort of thing. They report to the court. They're supposed to once a year, a financial report. I don't know how closely those are reviewed when they're filed. And then the other appointment is the guardian. And a guardian is appointed to take care of the person of the protected person, so our living arrangements and things like that to make sure their needs are met for things that are not financial. Now, one person can be appointed to both of these roles, or they can be separated out to different people. But it's a process through the courts. It's a full-blown kind of legal proceeding. You get attorneys involved. You have medical professionals. You have social workers. So, you know, it's not an inexpensive process. So that's really why we want to avoid it. And another reason we usually want to avoid it is because the protected person, in my experience, does need a guardian and conservator. And a lot of times, or most of the time, they do not still have the legal ability to convey to the court or to the judge who they want in those roles. And so the judge just really does not have a lot of direction, and that puts a judge in a really hard spot, particularly if family members are fighting over these roles. And you can probably guess which role everyone wants, right?
Yeah,
it's not guardian, it's conservator.
I'm sure. Is the do you work in that capacity when you're dealing in that arena? Do you work with other professionals that provide those kinds of, like, caregivers, or do you refer people?
Yes. It's the guardian conservatorship, you know, kind of the professionals involved in that here in Albuquerque is not a huge community. So you always have to hire a social worker and a medical professional. So, you know, I end up working with a lot of the same folks. They do that sort of work quite often. And when, you know, once you've come across someone that you really trust and do a good job, you want to keep using them.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's an important role.
Very, very. Yeah. Because they all, what the medical professional and social workers will do is interview the family, interview the person to be protected, and they report back to the court. They try to give kind of an impartial view of what's going on to the judge.
Is there let's say, you know, somebody finds, you know, they end up in that spot, but they don't have any financial wherewithal. What happens to somebody that is incompetent or in what, I don't know what term you would use, but what happens to them if they don't have any financial wherewithal?
It puts them in a very difficult situation. I mean, it doesn't come up a whole lot just because most people have some assets or family. You know, especially here in New Mexico, we're a very family-oriented community. So there's usually family members. But, you know, you can end up I have seen people end up a ward of the state, which, you know, is not where you want to be.
Okay. All right. Well, it's time to take another break. You're listening to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage. Our phone number is 897-4900. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Gray Matters, discussing all things senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, with your host, Dirk Gray. All right, in our last segment, I'm continuing my conversation with Guy Tan. Guy is an attorney with the Buttiger Law Firm. He's one of two partners here. And I think if you're listening, you're really enjoying the show, because he's a pretty cool guy, and he happens to know an awful lot about what he does. So if you're looking for a good attorney in real estate law, trust, estate planning, elder issues, that type of thing, give Guy at Buttiger a call, because he'd be happy to help you. All right. We were talking during the break, Guy, about real estate, and we talked a little bit about reverse mortgages. And I know you know, we kind of come from a planning perspective in terms of the way that we approach our clients, because somebody's house is typically their largest asset, and their mortgage is likely their largest debt. So it's important when they're looking at a mortgage, whether it's a forward mortgage or a reverse mortgage, they need to have an understanding in terms of how that fits with their other financial decisions and the way that they're planning. So we like to work with attorneys like you or financial planners that can help us with those types of things. So a client's making a good, you know, kind of a holistic decision about where they're headed. So let's talk about more about the real estate side and how things, we talked about how things are passed, but is there anything, or to others in the family or their heirs, is there anything else there you want to talk about?
Well, real estate is, I think, as you said, usually one of, if not the biggest asset in someone's estate, you know, maybe a retirement account or something, but it usually is one of the primary assets that we deal with in real estate. I mean, I enjoy it, but it presents opportunities and challenges. Real estate is often, especially with small estates, the asset that forces you into probate, because you've got to keep a clean chain of title for real estate. So making sure the deeds are done properly. But with good planning, you can still avoid probate with real estate. That's where trusts come in. And if I have clients that own lots of real estate, a lot of different places, presents challenges, because real estate is usually subject to the jurisdiction of wherever it is. So, you know, you're a New Mexico resident, you die here, your probate is properly initiated here in New Mexico, but say you own property in Colorado or Texas or somewhere, you're going to end up, you know, New Mexico court is not going to have jurisdiction over that property. So the probate process here does not allow you to handle that stuff. And so we've got to go to Texas, we've got to go to Colorado, wherever this property is, and do another probate proceeding. It's usually not a full-blown probate, but it's still another probate, another cost that we can avoid. We avoid those, you know, when we plan an estate with a trust. If I have a client who does own a lot of real estate all over, you know, I'm going to say a trust is a much better vehicle than a will that's going to go to probate, because we can avoid all those probate costs with the transfer. So it's challenges, but it's a lot of fun. Small estate, a great way to plan it. You know, if really there's not going to be a need for a probate, we've got an individual with, you know, some bank accounts that banks can do a pay on death on your accounts. We can do that with real estate. New Mexico has a transfer on death deed we can put into place that will make sure that the property passes outside of probate. Real estate is also one that you don't want to get into if you don't know what you're doing. I see a lot of people who will add a child's name to their deed or just convey their house to one of their children. And then they, you know, if something happens, they want the house back. Well, you can't just take the house back. You know, you have conveyed it. It's a legal transfer. Or you've added a child's name to it, and that child's creditors can now come after your house. So you want to be real careful with how you plan your estate, and particularly with real estate.
That's interesting. Well, you know what? Being in the reverse mortgage business, one of the biggest misconceptions there is out there is they think that the house is going to become the property of the lender. And it's just like any other mortgage and house. The heirs inherit the estate, and then they make the decision of selling the property, refinancing it, maybe paying it off with insurance proceeds, that kind of thing. But occasionally, you know, we'll run into exactly what you're talking about, where it gets a little more complicated and a little bit messier because they have done things like you were just mentioning. And so these kinds of programs, I think, are great programs because they're educational, and a lot of people really don't give much thought to sitting down with a good attorney and going through, you know, explaining. You know, everybody's different. It's like when clients call me at work, everybody's story is different. I've got this little form I go through and ask them questions because I've got to determine how I can help them. But if I don't ask good questions, I don't get good answers, you know. So, you know, having somebody like you that they can sit down and discuss these things with, I think is important, and I think it's a great idea. Let's talk a little bit more about trust, because I know that you can go a few different directions with trust.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there are probably more types of trust than I could, you know, tell you about right here today. I mean, just many, many kinds. But for estate planning, we limit it a little bit. But generally, most people are talking about a living trust, a grantor trust, you know, a trust that we're going to use. Pretty straightforward for estate planning. And one aspect of a trust where it really, in my opinion, is a much better vehicle to plan your estate with than a will, and that is planning for our own potential future incapacity. You know, modern medicine keeps us alive a lot longer than it used to. Many people live beyond their ability to take care of themselves, and a trust is a good way to plan for that. We avoid that guardian and conservatorship stuff. Trust is a much better way to have someone assist you than a power of attorney. It gets a little bit more respect than powers of attorney sometimes. I mean, certainly don't neglect your power of attorney. I recommend you do those as well, even if you have a trust. You know, when we put a trust together, you know, I mentioned we do a will, the pour over will. But as an estate plan, we really want clients to think about their powers of attorney, their trust, their will. Do they want to be cremated? Do they want to be organ donors? All of these kind of decisions we want to make. And we want to put all the documentation together, you know, to accomplish all of that. And that's, you know, kind of part of sitting down at an initial meeting and talking to them. Like you said, I enjoy meeting the people, getting to know them, their family, their story, because you really need to know all that to come up with a good plan. And, you know, as the professional, you think of things that they don't. So the more information you have, the better job you're going to do for them.
Okay, let me ask you this. When somebody, let's say that you've done a trust for somebody, and they pass away, and so do you get the call from the family saying, "Guy, what do we do now?"
Yes. I mean, not always, but yes, quite often. I mean, I love it when it happens, but, you know, there's no obligation to call me if I've put your trust together or whoever put the trust together, but usually you've developed a relationship and the family trusts you, and the decedent maybe has your business card with the trust or something like that. So yeah, very often you get a call from the family and you want to find out who's a successor trustee and get them in and educate them a little, because being a trustee is a fiduciary role. You know, there's a lot of laws affecting your conduct, and you can get into trouble if you don't do things correctly. You usually have a lot of beneficiaries you're working for, and they're, you know, my experience is not always the easiest folks to get along with. You maybe have one or two that are going to cause some trouble, and you can really mess yourself up if you don't know what you're doing. So certainly you want to go at least speak to, if you are a successor trustee, you need to go talk to a trust attorney, get some advice at least on the outset, and probably sign some paperwork to formalize your appointment as the successor trustee, so third parties will recognize you as the trustee now.
Really? That's interesting. So that's to protect you.
Yes, because the trustee has a duty to all of the beneficiaries. You know, an estate has could have creditors, has beneficiaries. You're carrying out the decedent's wishes. The trustee is going to have to account for every penny, you know, of the estate. You need to do a good accounting. You need to have a good inventory of what's in the estate. And people fight over the smallest things, you know, little items of personal property. So you really need to do a good job. It's along the lines of administering a probate estate, but you're out of court. You probably don't need quite as much legal help if everything goes smoothly. But you certainly, if you're not familiar with the role of a trustee, you need to get a little advice if you're going to be named as a successor. And if someone, you know, in your family, friends come and say, hey, you want to be the successor trustee on my trust, you know, think about it, because it's a job. Yeah. Yeah, it's not something to take lightly.
Well, my wife is, and now that we've had this conversation, I'm going to have a conversation with her tonight.
Well, quite often it only takes once in that role to know you're never going to volunteer to do it again.
I'm sure. All right. What can we say? We've got about another minute, Guy. Is there anything that you'd like to follow up? You know what you should do is seminars.
Yeah. No, that would be a good idea. No, I would just urge people out there, you know, to educate themselves on estate planning and take a look at it and see what you need and get it done.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you, Guy.
Thank you.
All right. I want to thank Guy Tan from the Buttiger Law Firm for being my guest on the show. I also want to thank KIVA team for making Gray Matters Discussing All Things Senior, produced by New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, your favorite place for all things senior, reverse mortgages, and you, our audience, for joining today's broadcast. Thank you for listening to the New Mexico Reverse Mortgage, the voice of reverse mortgages and seniors in New Mexico. If you'd like to call, the office phone number is 505-897-4900. Thank you for joining me today. I'm Dirk Gray.